Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Gabe Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. And Chad Withrow joins us at 5 o'clock, as always, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, tomorrow is the first day where I am going to sit my rear end on my couch and not just be excited to watch college football, but be excited for the specific game. It's Tennessee-Oklahoma. To me, and I know that we had the A&M-Notre Dame game in week one, but that didn't feel like a college football playoff implication kind of game. Georgia-Clemson, it was okay, and we... This, to me, feels like the first big game of the season. The first, hey, hold on, I can't do anything that time on Saturday because Tennessee's going to Oklahoma. Do you feel comfortable about tomorrow's game for the Vols, or are you nervous?
Oh, I feel comfortable in saying that Tennessee has been a much better football team through three games in Oklahoma when you look at them statistically. And the schedules aren't that far off. I mean, Tennessee has played two cupcakes. And they played a top 25 NC State team, and they won it 51-10 when they played them. Oklahoma beat a really bad Temple team, I think 51-3 in week one. They struggled against a pretty bad Houston team in a 16-12 win. And then they struggled, they're up 21-16, I think, in the fourth quarter on Tulane before pulling away in that one. If you look at Oklahoma offensively in this game, they're ranked in the hundreds in most categories. Tennessee is not ranked past 17th in any offensive or defensive category. They haven't allowed a touchdown in four games defensively. So I'm having a hard time seeing where Oklahoma is going to have a ton of success offensively other than Jackson Arnold's ability to run. But I think Oklahoma is going to be able to do some things defensively to Tennessee. I think that's where their strength is under Brent Venables. So look, the great variable, and you can say this about any game, is going to be turnovers. Oklahoma's very good at generating turnovers. Nico's first true road game, so we don't know how he's going to respond to that. He was away from Knoxville in the win over Iowa in the bowl game and the win over NC State. But I am genuinely excited about the atmosphere around this game. No matter how much Josh Heupel tries to downplay it, he cares a lot about beating Oklahoma. The way he was treated in 2014. He had an offense that averaged 36 points per game that year. He was a year removed from out-coaching Nick Saban in the Sugar Bowl,
yep,
and upsetting Alabama, where the offense put up 45 points in that game against Alabama. So he's got bitter feelings about Oklahoma, whether he's going to tell you that or not. It's very important to him. I don't think he's telling his players that, but his players know how important it is to him. And it is a giant game because if Tennessee's able to go there and win, if you look at Vegas coming into the season, the four most difficult opponents on Tennessee's schedule were in order at Georgia, Alabama at home, at Oklahoma, and NC State on a neutral field. Well, they beat the fourth most difficult opponent by 41 points. Mm-hmm. Now they get the third most difficult opponent on the road. If they can win this game and get to 4-0, it looks really good that Tennessee is going to be one of those 12 teams in the college football playoff. Lose it, though, and I think, you know, you're kind of looking at, can Tennessee split between Alabama at home and at Georgia, and it becomes much more difficult. Win it, and you can drop those two games, and I think you're still going to securely be in the 12.
So here's my theory on the Josh Heupel Oklahoma thing, which is, you're right, I don't think he's told his players about it. I don't think he's making a big deal about it publicly. I don't think he's making a big deal about it in the building. I think it's a big deal to him. And I do think that that matters. I think Josh Heupel coaches the way he played, which is I think he's really cool on the outside, but I think inside, I think that this one means more to him. And I do wonder this. Do you think Oklahoma, because they ended up making the choice to move on from Heupel in order to hire Lincoln Riley, they made Lincoln Riley the head coach. They had success with Lincoln Riley as the coach. Do you think they regret 10 years ago firing Josh Heupel? Because if Josh Heupel was their head coach and had inherited the program from Bob Stoops, then I don't think he leaves to go to USC.
You know, we interviewed Rocky Kalmus on the show today.
Former Titan great.
Former OU linebacker. You remember Rocky Kalmus,
oh,
obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And he loves Josh Heupel. You know, teammates with him on those teams in Oklahoma. And we talked to him about this. I think the people that I've talked to at Oklahoma, Jared, very much are of the belief that, it worked out for all sides, because they don't believe that Heupel would have become the coach he was going to become had he just stayed at Oklahoma and been named the coach in waiting. That really started, it kind of restarted his career, where, if you remember, Josh Heupel went to Utah State for a year. He recruited Jordan Love. He's the reason Jordan Love went to Utah State in that one year. Then he goes to Missouri and has success. Then he goes to UCF as the head coach and has success. And now we see what he's doing at Tennessee. So it really did kind of help form the coach that he is, and it forced him to make some adjustments to his offense that he made that's really helped him. Now, I think if you gave True Serum to someone from Oklahoma and you gave them the two options of firing Josh Heupel, bringing in Lincoln Riley, naming Lincoln Riley as the successor to Bob Stoops, and then knowing that Lincoln Riley was going to bolt for USC after a few years, versus firing Mike Stoops at the time, keeping Josh Heupel, and naming Josh Heupel the coach in waiting, and Josh Heupel is still your head coach years later because he's never going to leave Oklahoma under that scenario, I think they'd tell you they'd prefer the Josh Heupel scenario to what they have right now. They're not saying it, but I truly believe that they would prefer that. And I think that he would be the coach at Oklahoma had Mark Stoops made a different decision.
Does Brent Venables worry you defensively in this game, even though Oklahoma has not been as impressive in the kind of run-up to this game as Tennessee has?
Tennessee starting left tackle Lance Hurd being questionable concerns me in this game. I thought he was being set out against Kent State just to preventative measures, but he may not be able to go. That's a problem for Tennessee. I think Danny Stutsman is really good. I think Tennessee is going to try to do some things to get him moving with some guys in motion to try and to just sprint him from sideline to sideline and kind of wear him out defensively as the game goes on. The Oklahoma defensively, I believe they have the guys where they can load up against the run and at least limit Tennessee in the running game, which no team has been able to do yet this year. No team has slowed Tennessee down on the ground so far this year. Tennessee hasn't had to do a ton in the air because they've been able to run it so effectively. I think Oklahoma can shut that part of the faucet off, and they're going to challenge Nico to beat Tennessee vertically down the field, and he can do it, and these receivers can do it. So if I had to predict where Oklahoma can affect Tennessee, it's going to be in the run game because they're going to commit to all their resources to slowing down the run. But it's going to offer up some one-on-one opportunities on the outside. If Tennessee's offensive line can hold up with a backup left tackle, I think Tennessee's going to have some huge plays through the air in this game.
Chad Withrow with us from Outkick, presented by Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. What do we expect for Oklahoma's SEC-like atmosphere for their first big SEC game at home? I mean, Oklahoma is certainly no chump, but is it an SEC? Is it LSU? Is it Auburn? Is it Georgia? Is it Tennessee? In terms of road environments?
I think for one night, it's going to look as good or better than most of those places. It's going to be terrific. I mean, it's going to be as good as Auburn or LSU or go down the list, the Swamp. Look, this is a place that is statistically, and we can say also the Big 12 and OU's dominance in the Big 12 has a lot to do with this, and the fact that they never play Texas at home. They play on a neutral site.
Sure.
But they're more successful than almost anyone in America at home over the years. They very rarely lose at home. They have not been a touchdown or more underdog at home since 1998. That's the year before Josh Heupel got there as a player. So this is pretty historic that they're a touchdown underdog at Tennessee in this game. We have not even seen that a lot. So I think the atmosphere is going to be incredible. It is going to be very, very loud. Tennessee, who's a fast starting team, they want to get up early on Oklahoma and negate some of that home field advantage. But yeah, I think it's going to be very, very SEC-like in this game. Talking to an Oklahoma reporter yesterday, they're all looking forward to going to the Grove in a few weeks. They're going to Auburn next week. This is their first chance to get to experience some of these SEC venues covering Oklahoma. But I think for at least one night, you're definitely going to see a very, very SEC-like atmosphere in Norman.
What is your right now, your confidence level, if you had to put a percentage on it, that Tennessee ends up in the college football playoff today? And let's say in 48 hours, if they win, what would your percent confidence level be that they make the playoff?
I'd say right now it's about 65%. I feel good about them making the college football playoff. If they win, it goes up to about 85. I think it's a 20% bump. I think if they lose, it goes down to 45. I think it's a 20% swing either way. Look, it's not the end of things for Tennessee if they lose to Oklahoma, but by any means. But I just think it gives them a little bit of cushion if they're able to go on the road and win this game, knowing they get a bye week next week, then they go to Arkansas. Then they got that difficult two-game stretch. And look, I know Florida's what they are right now, but ask any Tennessee fan. Beating Florida is always tricky for whatever reason for Tennessee, even at home, even if it's with an interim coach at that point, and Billy Napier's fired. So they get Florida and Alabama back-to-back at home. And that's going to be a key stretch after this game tomorrow night. So, yeah, I'm feeling very good about Tennessee's chances of making the playoff if they win on the road at Norman. If they lose, it's a little bit less than 50%, I think, of them making it.
First game this season that I'm literally like, okay, Vols game, you know, like, and I, you know me, I'm not a Tennessee fan. So, but it's the first game this year that for me has been a must sit my rear end on the couch and watch the game kind of thing, as opposed to like last week, I convinced myself to watch, you know, South Carolina LSU because it was close and it was on. And so I was into it in Kentucky and Georgia and then Vandy and Georgia. But this is the first one where it's like, okay, this is the big game. And I don't know, maybe it's because I live in Tennessee, but I also feel like we've
Well,
kind of.
and will this one live up to it? You know, like I think there are other games that we would say that's the first big one. You know, Texas at Michigan is one that everyone circled, and that was a blowout for Texas, so it wasn't as interesting. USC LSU, a little bit of that, but you know that game is good, but not necessarily great. Wisconsin Alabama was an interesting cross conference matchup, didn't live up to the hype. So will this game be thrilling? You know, in the fourth quarter, we don't know. But I mean, I think in terms of hype, because of the hypo factor, yeah, it's the top game of the year so far.
Chad Withrow with us from OutKick. The hot seat awaits next. The Titans staring down 0-3. We will do that next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us from OutKick, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. Okay, Chad, let's get right to the hot seat unless you have a thought.
My thought is, let's get to the hot seat.
Number one, how will Amy Adams-Strunk react to 0-3 if the loss is to Malik Willis?
Firing her secretary, firing an assistant special teams coach, firing an analyst of some sort. I mean, somebody's going down for this. I don't know who it is, but you know, it's like the Daniel Day-Lewis movie that there will be blood if the Titans lose to Malik Willis and the Packers. Somebody is going to get fired, would be my guess. This is an owner that hasn't always handled things, I'm not going to say rationally, but you know, even keeled when something goes bad. There's been some emotional responses to things. I think the AJ Brown game and the firing of John Robinson is one of those examples. You know, there's accounts of her being very angry around the locker room of the team and being very vocal about it after games, after losses too. So, you know, a lot of people abide by what, like the 5-10 minute rule, you know, to take a deep breath before they react and respond emotionally to something. I don't know that Amy Adams-Strunk does that. And this would be quite the emotional moment. And I wouldn't blame her, you know, if the Titans were to lose to Malik Willis after trading him away and saying that Will Levis is their guy. And then if the Packers can bring Willis down after seeing nothing from him in a Titans uniform and win here in Nashville, that's one of the low points in Titans franchise history if that happens.
So we talked about this today, and we would say, I guess it would go up there with the 2011 loss to the 0-10 Colts that kept the Titans out of the playoffs. And I think it would also be up there with the Vince Young throwing his pad in the stands in 2010. I'm
Well,
trying
and
to.
just in terms of like when you look back on it, it's not like Malik Willis is going to go on to great things in the NFL,
Correct.
right? Like this is just his time to start because out of necessity. You know, he doesn't do really anything last week, but Matt LaFleur gets a game plan where they can run all over Indy and win a low-scoring game. He's got his center puking on the football where he can't throw it during the game. I think of a loss to Johnny Football with the Titans. I think of a loss to Ryan Leaf also, just in terms of losing to bad quarterbacks. The Colts deal that you mentioned there, that's one of the all-time bad ones too. This, whatever your top five list is, it's in the top five if that were to happen. I don't think that it's going to. I know we're going to continue on with the hot seat, but if that were to happen, yeah, it's truly, truly bad.
Should the Titans tank if they lose to Malik Willis?
I don't know that they're going to have to decide to. I mean, what would tanking be? Starting Will Levis or
True.
Mason Rudolph? I mean, if they lose to Malik Willis and the Packers, they're likely not winning more than three or four games, and they're going to have a very high draft pick. And who is the quarterback in this upcoming draft that's not very good with quarterbacks that you're going to draft? Because you're drafting a quarterback. If you're even thinking about tanking, you're drafting a quarterback in the first round. So no, I don't think you're going to have to make some decision to tank if that were to happen.
Well, the worst part about it is I think the best quarterback in the draft might not even be the best quarterback on his own team. And that's Quinn Ewers. I mean, I'm not a Carson Beck guy, and I have no interest in Shador. So that would then leave me with Ewers, and I'm not even convinced Ewers is the best player, is the best quarterback on his own team.
Yeah, and then, a year from now, you get Nico. You're going to have some other bigger quarterback, Arch Manning possibly, but he might stay all 4 years at Texas. I mean, this is not the cycle to want to be drafting a quarterback. I'm with you on
When would you give up on Will Levis?
that one. I mean, I honestly, if I want to go back to it was his answer to Peyton Manning probably, before he was even drafted. I mean, you know me, Jared. I was never high on the pick. I've never been overly confident. I probably secretly was out at that point. I was out watching him in Kentucky. There was that game in Neyland Stadium where he was just awful. And I kept hearing all of these excuses. Well, he's hurt and his offensive line sucks and this. And I'm like, well, did you see where he just panicked, threw it up to the defense three times? Like, you don't have to do that. Your offensive line can be bad and you can take a sack without fumbling. You don't have to throw a pick six to the other team. And I saw that just two or three too many times in his career at Kentucky. And it's continued to the Titans. And I don't understand why people are surprised anymore because this is who Will Levis is. He does not have a good sense of calm during a game. Even when good things happen, he's not calm. I mean, he's going crazy when those things happen. You don't see that from the best quarterbacks in the NFL. You just don't. So I was probably out before he was even drafted. But, when was I officially out? It's when he comes back after that horrible moment in Chicago and decides to get inverted like Maverick in the original Top Gun to the ground and try to roll the ball to a running back and turns it over and costs the Titans points. That was the official in-game moment where I was out on Will Levis.
Would you trade Will Levis straight up for Bryce Young, and who would say no in a potential deal?
I would absolutely do that just to see if Bryce Young was just broken by Carolina or, if he's broken in general. So, yeah, I mean, I don't, I think we've seen enough of Will Levis. I would love to see that for the
Don't you
Titans.
think
Who
Carolina would
would
do
say
that?
no to it?
Yeah, like would Carolina say no? I don't see care like they say, no, we're still in on Bryce, but I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't, it's hard to predict the something from the insane. If you give me like a logical person, I can predict what they might be thinking or what they'll do. But I don't know what David Tepper's thinking or what he would say from not even day to day, from minute to minute, how he would respond to that. So I don't, what Carolina's saying publicly, they wouldn't do it. But I mean, I would do it if I were them. And I would certainly do it if I were the Titans. But it's hard for me to say what Carolina's going to do because as we've seen with David Tepper, that's very unpredictable. And usually not the right thing.
Do you believe that Bryce Young still has an ability to be an NFL quarterback?
I do. I think it's very specific, though. I think what we've seen now, he's not just some plug and play NFL starter. I liken him to Gardner Minshew. You need to find a spot that will allow for someone who's smaller in stature that moves around really well. that can excel at quarterback. I think of a Minshew type player. So it's not going to work everywhere, but if you find the right system, I think that he could still possibly work.
Who will end up being the better quarterback, Arch Manning or Nico Iamaleava?
I mean, if I had to say right now, it's Nico because we've seen more of him and I like what I've seen from him. Now, if you're just asking me predict right now who's going to have the better career, it's Arch Manning because of his support system, because of his family, because of who he can rely on for information and how grounded the kid seems and everything. I mean, he's so grounded, you know, Eli and Peyton both spent all 4 years in college. I think he's probably going to do the same. I don't think he needs money with his family, and he loves college football, and he'll probably stay and start for 2 full years at Texas and complete all 4 years in college and not leave early. So I think ultimately because of that, Arch Manning is going to be the better NFL quarterback. But I mean, there's nothing not to like about Nico right now
I mean, there's
with his
nothing not to like about either of them. I mean, I was watching Arch run the ball against UTSA, and I mean, he is athletic. I mean, I think they're both really good quarterbacks.
73-yard run, 21 miles per hour. I think he topped out at speed. You know,
For a
Daniel Jones is
freshman.
like ran like 23, 24 miles per hour too. So I don't want to get too caught up with just flat out straightaway speed that we saw from Arch Manning. But yeah, he is an underrated athlete because everyone immediately thinks about Peyton and Eli being immobile, but they forget that Archie was a very mobile quarterback, and his dad was a wide receiver at Ole Miss before he had the spinal injury. So there's some athleticism in that family, not just the ability to throw the ball. They can run it in the Manning family too, but you forget about that because of Peyton and Eli.
Can Clark Lee recover from Vanderbilt's devastating loss Saturday?
Well, now he's got to go steal one. I mean, I would count, you know, beating Virginia Tech as a almost 2 touchdown underdog at home, stealing one early in the year. Now he gave one back where they were a double digit favorite. So yeah, he can recover, but you know, it's gonna take shocking somebody, right? It's gonna take certainly winning at least one game in the SEC, which looks like their best opportunity is what, probably South Carolina at home. If they can win that one, you know, that to me would probably be stealing one. They're gonna have to go take one back for him to really have a shot. But again, Jared, I say all of this not really knowing what Vanderbilt's thoughts or commitment is to football, which looks better now that they're improving the stadium and doing some different things. So if it is better, then he's going to have to go steal one to keep his job, unfortunately, because I love Clark Lee and I'm wishing him well, but that's a tough one on Saturday night to lose to Georgia State.
That was devastating. Like it was, I just, oof. I mean, I watched that when they scored to take the lead. I was like, okay, they're gonna avoid a disaster here. And then when they lost, I just thought, I don't know how you put lipstick on that one. Okay, your thoughts on the 10% talent tax that Tennessee is going to be adding for tickets at Neyland Stadium?
I think it's brilliant. I think Danny White has been on the cutting edge of everything that's changed in college sports. I also understand that if you are a season ticket holder in the upper deck and it's a big part of your entertainment budget, you're spending on tickets to go to Tennessee games, why you would be upset. But I also think Tennessee fans are a little bit more progressive than a lot of other college football fans because they've seen the benefits of NIL. And they understand that you have to pay for top talent. And Tennessee fans like experiencing success so much that they're okay forking over some money. The fact that there's 5,000 members of the Vol Club that pay monthly to Spire Sports and their NIL collective, that shows you that Tennessee fans are committed to spending money to pay players. So I think with this fan base, because of the success, it's going to go over just fine. And the fact that there's a long waiting list for season tickets. So Danny White knows that he can play this game now. He's got leverage. Tennessee looks really good. They're exciting. And he knows that if someone wants to walk away because of this and not, you know, pay for their tickets, there's going to be other people ready to buy the tickets also. So I think it's a smart move that Danny White's talked about having to have a plan for when this ruling comes back from the courts and they're going to have to fork over $20, $22 million a year in revenue to players. You got to find new revenue streams. You got to find places you can cut otherwise. This is just one of those things, and I really like it.
Are you surprised by Caleb Williams' struggles through 2 weeks as a rookie?
No, I wouldn't say surprised. I mean, there was always going to be a learning curve for him coming into the league. So I haven't really seen anything that shocks me so far. I did laugh when CJ Stroud tried to give him advice. And I don't know if you saw the video of
I
that, but he
did.
just shrugged him off and was like, please stop talking to me, and didn't even really acknowledge him. And I kind of like that with Caleb Williams, simply because CJ Stroud's a year older than him. It'd be one thing if you lost to Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers and they were trying to impart some wisdom to you after the game, but this is his peer. He thinks he's better than CJ Stroud right now. They're 1 year apart. He
I mean,
wants to
he's
beat
definitely
CJ
not
Stroud.
better than
So,
CJ Stroud, though.
well, I don't. CJ Stroud's a lot better, but my point is, I don't want to hear from someone after a loss that I think, is one of my equals. If you're Caleb Williams, he's only a year older. Yes, he had a great rookie year, but I don't want to sit there and chit chat with somebody after a loss. So, I get tired of that in the NFL, like the jersey exchanging culture that you see at times. Like, I don't want to talk to you after you beat me. I'm not going to sit there and hang out forever. It doesn't mean be, a prick to somebody that comes up to you, but I'm not going to sit there and hang out and chat about your life with you after you just beat me. So I like that part about Caleb Williams.
I'll just say this. Week one last year, Trevor Lawrence did the same thing. He went up to Anthony Richardson and was like, dude, you cannot take the hits that you took in college. And I think Anthony Richardson probably was like, okay, yeah, thanks, man, and walked off. And then Anthony Richardson got concussed and missed a game. And then Anthony Richardson, Harold Landry busted his shoulder open. And so I see what you're saying. I mean, I think he's trying to help Caleb. And I just think Caleb's too smart for everybody. He's like, I'll
Well,
just put that in my purse and
maybe,
move on.
but also like that. I don't want to hear anything in that moment. That's not the time to like impart your wisdom. Like, if you want to reach out during the week, and we can have a talk about, hey, here's what I did my rookie year. Here, this will help you. I'm fine with that. My point is, when you lose a game in the moment, like whatever your reaction is, other than basically Caleb Williams doing what he does on his fingernails. And saying, F you to the person, then I'm fine with it. Like a little bit of a competitive fire and edge and being mad about losing and playing poorly and not wanting to sit there and just nod your head, yes, sir. Yes, sir, CJ Stroud. Yes, sir. I will clean up those mistakes or I will learn from these mistakes. You would hope that if you draft someone number one overall, they understand they need to learn from their mistakes. So it's not like there's a lot of, true wisdom coming from CJ Stroud that. And I like CJ Stroud a lot. We interviewed him at the Super Bowl. Really like the guy, but come on. That's not the time.
Last one for you. Your reaction to the reaction that Brian Callahan has received negatively about his outburst at Will Levis on Sunday.
I mean, grow up, people. If you really have a problem with that, give me a break.
Ryan
That's ex
Fitzpatrick, NFL Network did an 8-minute sit-down discussion about whether or not Brian Callahan was over the line.
For questioning, what are you thinking? I mean, did anyone? That's what's crazy to me is guys who actually played NFL football would even question this or discuss it. That's just so ridiculous. Callahan reacted exactly the way I reacted, the way every Titans fan reacted the moment.
I reacted.
What the bleep are you thinking? I mean, that is not over the line at all. That's the minimum of what he could be doing. Showing up as quarterback, the quarterback showed himself up in doing that. After the week before, like whatever Brian Callahan says is not going to be worse than America making fun of Will Levis for that screenshot, that still photo of him throwing the ball with his belly button almost touching the ground, trying to get it to a running back behind him. That's showing yourself up. Brian Callahan saying that on camera has nothing to do with anything. And here's the other thing, my advice to Brian Callahan, which he'll probably take the same way that Caleb Williams took advice from CJ Stroud last week, which is he doesn't want to hear it at all. Don't apologize for that.
I agree.
Don't sit there and say, oh, I'm on camera now. I really got to shut up. This is football. And we saw Aaron Rodgers last night, the shove with Robert Saleh, and it turns out to be nothing. But who cares if it was something? I mean, come on. That is not something you apologize for. I did not like the apology from Brian Callahan.
I agree. Chad Withrow from Outkick, as always, on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad, great stuff. Enjoy the football this weekend, and we will talk soon.
And if you were a Titans fan that was offended by that moment, toughen up. Tighten up and toughen up. That's my advice to those Titans fans. Thanks, Jared. Have a great weekend.
Yep, Chad Withrow from Outkick on the program, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Two things. One, Josh Jacobs is a very good player. I think they do their offensive line, I think, is probably underrated. I think they do a nice job both in the run and pass pro. And then ultimately, I think that offensive staff there is high level. They do a really good job. Matt's an excellent play caller and play designer and schemer, and put his guys in great position to have a chance to win the game. And they executed it very well. But I've always been a fan of Matt and the things that he's done offensively and the way that he's leads that team there. I mean, they've done a really nice job for a number of years now. So that's the biggest reason to me is they got good players and a good scheme, and they did a nice job making it come to life. And I thought Malik did a really nice job of keeping the team in position to win. You know, he didn't turn the ball over and basically executed exactly as I'm sure he was asked to. So really a tip of the cap to all those guys on offense. They did a great job on their offensive staff, on their offensive roster of executing a well-designed plan.
Okay, that was Brian Callahan talking about the Green Bay Packers offensive coaching staff. Yes, Matt LaFleur, the Matt LaFleur that was here that took 12 weeks to realize that Derrick Henry was probably the best player in the offense, that Matt LaFleur. So I kind of have a confession to make when it comes to Green Bay this week. And we'll pick the game. I've been saying all week, I think the Titans are going to win if Malik plays quarterback. So make of that what you will. Done a lot of time talking today about if they don't beat Malik, but I think they're going to beat Malik. In fact, I've guaranteed that if Malik plays quarterback, they're going to beat him. And the Titans are going to just load the box, and they're not going to let Malik run it, and they're not going to let Josh Jacobs run it. They're going to make Malik beat L'Jarius Sneed one-on-one on the outside. And if Malik does, they'll shake his hand and say congratulations, and then they'll endure Amy's wrath, and that'll be that. But I don't think that's going to happen. But anywho, there is something that playing the Packers, I feel like I just want to take a second to acknowledge that right now, everything that I think is wrong with the Titans, I look at in the Packers, and I don't see those issues. You know, it's funny. It kind of feels like the last era of Titan football, that it kind of hit the iceberg with the loss, with the win at Green Bay on Thursday night. It was the last win that John Robinson would have as Titans general manager. It was the last one of that 2022 season. And maybe the moment they hit the iceberg was when they traded A.J. Brown. But it just kind of feels like if you go back to that 2022 season. Now, the Titans were winning some ugly ball games. Don't get it twisted. I'm not here making excuses saying that everything was perfect in 2022. But they were 7-3. And Colin Cowherd had a whole rant about how the Titans are the ball club that squeezes every drop of juice out of the orange in order to win football games. And ever since that moment, it has all gone to hell. And I think we can agree with that. And I think, again, whether you want to blame it on one person, I never think it's that simple, but we've seen a lot of blame. We've seen a lot of blame on the 1970 offense the Titans run with Mike Vrabel. And we've seen a lot of people throw Vrabel under the bus. And we've seen a lot of people throw Robinson under the bus. And now we're starting to see people throw ownership under the bus. And so it's kind of like this whole conglomerate of issues that have led to the fact that you stink. And that right now you're 0-2, you might be 0-3. You know, it's you can't protect your punter, no matter who the special teams coach is. So on and so forth. And then I look at the Packers, and I just think about how jealous I am of the Green Bay Packers as an organization. That's the kind of organization that I want to be. And again, they may lose to the Titans on Sunday. If Malik plays, they probably are going to lose. If Jordan Love were to, you know, somehow get out there, I would think that they would be favored if Love was playing quarterback. But again, the Titans could beat Jordan Love. The Titans almost beat Aaron Rodgers last week. But But again, I cannot tell you how jealous I am of how well-run the Green Bay Packers are. Mark Murphy is the team president, but he's essentially the owner. You know, the Green Bay Packers obviously are a publicly owned company, but Mark Murphy is the team president, and he calls the shots. The buck stops with him. Now, underneath him is Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, and Brian Gutekunst has reign to run the operation. Now, he works through those issues with Mark Murphy, and he works through those issues with Matt LaFleur, the coach, but ultimately, Gutekunst is the one who, if you've got an issue, you go see him. It was Gutekunst that Aaron Rodgers kept going after because, again, Aaron Rodgers knows it was Brian Gutekunst who runs the football operations. It was Brian Gutekunst's decision to draft Jordan Love. And Aaron Rodgers can say that he was mad about whatever he was mad about. I think we all know Aaron Rodgers well enough to know that Aaron Rodgers was mad that they picked a quarterback. Aaron Rodgers was mad that they were essentially signaling the end of his tenure there, and that got Aaron off his ass to say, I'll show you, and he went out and won back-to-back MVPs. But remember, Aaron's beef wasn't with LaFleur, and it wasn't with Murphy. It was always with Gutekunst, because Gutekunst runs the football team, period. And Matt LaFleur coaches the team, period. There is no ambiguity. Again, you know, did Mark Murphy want a new defensive coordinator? No. Matt LaFleur runs the team. They all three collaborate, and we saw that with the selection of Jordan Love and then the Aaron Rodgers fallout and then the way that ultimately they moved on from Aaron. Remember, Bob McGinn, who's covered the Packers for forever, said in the offseason when Aaron got traded to the Jets, Bob McGinn came out and said, oh, no, it's the whole shooting match that's ready to move on. Murphy, Gutekunst, and LaFleur. Well, Bob McGinn doesn't find that out if the Green Bay Packers haven't sat there and said, okay, we're all in, we're all moving on. He doesn't find that out. They don't tell him that. But again, they all work together, but they all decide, and everybody's got their own job, and they all do it. And there's no owner that, you know, they lose a game, and the guy goes crazy, and you're not going to see that. They are not afraid to hold their ground like they did with Aaron when Aaron was threatening not to play anymore. And they're also not afraid to make a tough decision in Green Bay, like they made a tough decision when it was time to move on from Aaron. There would have been some owners there that after Aaron had won back-to-back MVPs that would have said, give Aaron what he wants and I don't care. There are some organizations that would have done that. Not Green Bay. Robert Kraft still holds it against Bill Belichick, by the way, that Bill Belichick said, oh, no, Brady, he's declining. He's not going to. You don't have to worry about that in Green Bay. In Green Bay, I get the sense that they can properly look at their team in the mirror, that they can analyze their roster. They can see the deficiencies. They don't talk themselves into bad players. If they want a guy and they have to pay, they will. They paid Aaron Rodgers when he was a back-to-back MVP. They paid Josh Jacobs at running back. They paid Xavier McKinney, the safety from the Giants, who is turning the football over once a game for them. And might be, by the way, a humongous nightmare for Will Levis on Sunday. But they paid those guys. They wanted to pay Devontae Adams. Devontae didn't want to be there. And again, there wasn't some long, drawn-out media, oh, us versus them and Devontae and this. And they block all that out. The Green Bay Packers are as buttoned up as you get in the NFL. And I don't think it's an accident because Green Bay is a popular franchise. You know, the NFL's a little different than some of the other sports. The other sports, it's like the big markets rule. Baseball, Boston, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. Basketball, it's more of the star players, but again, it's the big markets that kind of rule baseball and hockey. They'll put, no matter how good the Predators are, they ain't putting the Predators on TV. And the reason I say this is because football, some of these smaller, quote-unquote, markets are actually the bigger TV draws, bigger fan bases. Yes, Dallas is technically a large market, but it's not even the biggest market in its own state. That's Houston. But who gets more TV time, Dallas or Houston? Pittsburgh is a small market, and yet obviously we know that the Steelers have a vast and loyal fan base. And Green Bay is as popular as any of these other teams. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now. I remember the last time the Packers came here in 2016. And before the game, I said, there's going to be 50-50 Titan Packer fans. And Floyd said, that'll never happen. And that happened to be a game he went to for whatever reason. His son, Sean, got invited in a box from his job to go to the game. So Sean took Floyd to the game, and Floyd walked out of there, and he said to me the next day, he was like, it might have been more than that. Like, it might have been more than 50-50. So they're going to be like, the Packers have a ton of fans. And yet, in spite of their popularity, in spite of the fact that they are a TV team, and there's all these people that want to report on the Packers and write about the Packers, and you know they've always had a star quarterback, so that always makes you more of a draw as far as drama and gossip's concerned. Green Bay never succumbs to the issues that the dumber organizations do. They draft with a plan. They are fair to their coaches. They were more than fair to Mike McCarthy. And I believe, not all the time, but more consistently than not, Green Bay wins. Why? Because they're so buttoned up. So I will just say this. I have serious franchise envy for the Packers. I don't have franchise envy for the Chiefs. I have quarterback envy for the Chiefs. I have quarterback envy for the Bills. But when it comes to the Packers and the Ravens, I have serious franchise envy. This is a team that does it the right way, that doesn't have all the problems that all the other teams do that get in their own way. And at the end of the day, when it comes to the Packers, I tip my cap and I say, man. And the Titans might win Sunday, but I say, I'm jealous. 615-737-1025 is our phone number on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Six pack picks are next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063 The Game. Okay, Stillman and Company, time for six-pack picks this week. We got to hurry it up this week. Ian, how did we do?
Okay, last week was not so great. 2-4.
Yeah, it was tough. I picked the Titans to win. All right, let's just get right into the games.
Yes, 2-4 last week. The season total is now 10-8.
We can live with that. Let's roll.
Okay, we will start with our one college football game this week. Number 6, Tennessee at number 15, Oklahoma, Saturday night, 6:30 ABC, over under 56.5, the Vols are -7.
I'll take the Vols, and I think this is going to be a close game for about three quarters. Vols are going to blow them out in the end, and Josh Heupel in the fourth quarter, it's personal to him. He's going to put it on. I'll lay the 7, Tennessee wins by about 17 points.
Okay, we move on to the NFL, some good games this week. We begin with the 2-0 Chargers at the 2-0 Steelers. Noon, CBS, over-under, though, very low, 35.5. Herbert working on an ankle injury, Pittsburgh -1.5.
I'll take the Chargers in this. I think that Joe Alt's a big difference maker for them on the line. I know. And I just don't think Justin Fields is very good, and I know Herbert's hurt, but I think I'll take Harbaugh in this one. Give me the Chargers.
Okay, we move on to the your boy Sammy D and the Vikings hosting the Texans. Also noon, CBS, over under 46.5. Houston is -2.
Give me Sam Darnold. I'm not getting off the train now. In my heart, I think Houston's probably going to win, but I'm not getting off the Sam Darnold train. Give me Sammy D. I'll take the Vikings. Justin Jefferson goes ham, and I'll get another I told you so, and then you guys will tell me that the Texans really aren't that good.
Okay, interesting game here. The 0-2 Ravens at the 1-1 Cowboys, 325 on Fox. You can hear the game on 94.9 The Fan. Over-under, 47.5. Baltimore is -1.
I'll take Baltimore in this. They're not going to start out 0-3. Derrick Henry wanted to play on the Cowboys, and I think the Cowboys got exposed last week. I don't think the Cowboys are very good. I'll take the Ravens. They're not going to start 0-3. Give me Baltimore, and I'll lay the point.
Okay. In our Monday Night Football, we have a doubleheader this week. The early game is 0-2 Jags at Buffalo. Monday Night Football, 6:30 ESPN. over under 45.5. Bills are minus 5.
I'll take Buffalo in this. Normally, I would take the 0-2 team, but I think there's a lot of holes in Jacksonville's roster. I think Jacksonville might not be very good. I'll take Buffalo with Josh Allen.
Okay, that brings us to our final game. The Packers at the Titans, noon on Fox. Over under, very low, 37.5. Titans are minus 3.
I'll take the Titans in this. I think the Titans are going to win this game 21-3. I think it'll end up being more of a runaway in the fourth quarter. Give me 2 turnovers for Malik. Will Levis doesn't turn it over but doesn't do anything spectacular. And I think we can all live with it. Titans 21, Packers 3. That's it for us. We're out of here. Everybody enjoy the football. Have a great weekend. We'll see you 9:30 for the award-winning pregame show on Sunday. Jake and TD are up next.